Good morning and welcome to the Eastman Financial Report. I'm Dan Eastman, your host, and today is Wednesday, December 13th, 2023. We are clearly on the backside of December, and we're looking forward to wrapping up a very, very stimulating and exciting 2023, and looking forward to an even more stimulating 2024. Thank you so much for tuning in today. I apologize for being out yesterday. I had a couple of series of meetings that couldn't be avoided, but I'm happy to be back today. And of course, we missed some big news, but I'll get to that shortly. But thank you so much for tuning into WVW-TV to not only gather financial information from this program, but also to hear within the marketplace of ideas, the great marketplace of freedom and thought. WVW-TV is certainly a leader in bringing very, very important programming to that marketplace so that we have a great diversity of opinion and information under our First Amendment. Our beautiful right to free speech and to speak freely and express our opinions, which all adds to the wonderful marketplace that people can enter in, and you can see various viewpoints and hear various opinions, and that's what freedom is all about. So thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you for supporting WVW-TV as well. As you know, we're not a commercial network. We don't sell soap and advertising or whatever. We don't do that at all. We rely very much on the support of our viewer base, and that includes you if you're watching, of course, and we would appreciate it if you're in the mood to be generous during this very generous gift-giving season. Certainly going to the WVW Foundation and making a donation will very much help keep this programming online free. As you know, you don't pay to watch the programs live or the reruns in the middle of the night. It's all free. There's no paywall. There's no subscription. You don't have to sign up for anything. All you need to do is click on the WVWTV.com web address, and you can see not only great live programming throughout the day, but also very important video reruns that are available 24/7. So if you're thinking about making a donation, this would be a great time to do it. It doesn't these networks don't they're not free. I mean, there's a lot of costs involved in putting on this type of programming, and this would be a great time for you to go to the WVW Foundation. .com or give them a call at 901-468-9357 and make a donation. It's really money well spent to preserve our freedoms. We do have sponsors, corporate sponsors for this network. And of course, my corporate sponsor is Swiss America Trading, which is an American company based in Arizona. And they sell precious metals. And of course, if you are interested in buying precious metals or collecting precious metals or diversifying your holdings or maybe even protecting yourself from inflation, Swiss America is a really important sponsor of this network. And they're a very fine company. They've been around a long time, been sponsoring us a long time. But more importantly, their reputation in this sector is stellar. And if you are wanting to buy precious metals for yourself or as gifts, give them a call. 1-800-519-6271 or go to their website, SwissAmerica.com. And if you use the promo code Eastman, which stands for Eastman Financial Report, if you use the promo code Eastman, you will see what they have for sale. And of course, right now they're running a really great special. I think there's still a little time left here. If you know anything about precious metals and owning tangible metals, which means metal you have in your hand, that's why it's tangible, it's tactile, you can hold it. If you want to buy gold coins, silver coins, platinum coins, or bullion, or even collector coins, numismatic coins, Swiss America has a great inventory, and that's their business. So when you're dealing in that space, you want to buy coins or bullion or gold, silver, whatever, you basically want to know two things. Number one, the purity of that gold or silver or platinum. And number two, the size. So if you buy a 1 ounce gold coin, you expect 1 ounce of pure gold. You don't expect a half an ounce of, you know, diluted gold. And Swiss America offers the best products. A lot of coins are minted by governments, including the United States Mint, and those are called bullion coins, and you can order those and you can hold those. And right now, Swiss America is offering a great deal on silver half dollars. You can see on the screen, the one in the middle is silver, and they make a half dollar size. And right now they're offering that half dollar sized silver coin for $13.50, which includes shipping. And that's a big deal because, first of all, precious metals are heavy and it costs a little money to ship them. Secondly, you want to ship them securely so that they show up at your house. And if shipping's included, that's a deal. Because if you look at this type of purchase, there's a base, and that's the cost that you pay. So you're going to pay $13.50 for that coin. And then there's a shipping cost, and that would increase your basis in the coin for, you know, your investment basis, basically. Well, with free shipping, you don't have to worry about that. It's $13.50 each. There's a limit of 250 coins per person. And once the inventory is depleted, then the special is over, and this bargain will be gone. So if you're looking for gift-giving ideas for this holiday season, think about giving somebody a gift of precious metals. I mean, certainly something they won't use and throw in the garbage and end up in a landfill. Nobody throws precious metal out. But it's an interesting gift because it's also symbolic. You're saying, you know, we can take our Federal Reserve notes or our currency and we can buy gold or silver or platinum. And you know, here is a piece of that. And that purchasing power is captured within that metal. And this is why those are really kind of cool gifts. So give Swiss America a call, 1-800-519-6271. Go to their website, SwissAmerica.com. Use the promo code Eastman, and then you'll get the deal, the special $13.50 for a silver half dollar, and shipping's included. And, you know, you can make your holiday shopping adventure come to an end today by merely buying everybody on your list the silver coin. So, okay, thank you so much, Swiss America. We appreciate your sponsorship. Let's jump into the news. And, of course, while the biggest news is breaking yesterday, I'm off doing something else. But the big news yesterday, of course, were the inflation numbers. And of course, we have been talking about this for months and months, if not weeks and weeks. But the numbers came out, and the consumer price index came out. And of course, it's always a mixed signal. But the headline, I guess, is that if you remember how they factor consumer price index, which is the measurement of inflation within the system, there's the headline number, which includes this great big basket of goods and services. And that's how they track this. They track the ups and downs across the country, and they do a bunch of mathematics, and they come up with a number, a ratio. Basically, it's a percentage increase over month over month increase, or year over year, or both. And what we saw was that the October consumer price index was flat. There was no inflation in October, according to the Bureau. But in November, it went up 0.1%. And you think, well, you know, statistical adjustment, what's 0.1%? Well, in this world, 0.1% is meaningful. And that was the headline change. The core inflation, they do a couple of different slices of inflation. Of course, headline is everything, and the core inflation is everything except food and energy, which are really important to people. I mean, if you know, you go to the grocery store and buying gasoline for your car, the prices are going up, but they take that out of the core because they want to see, because those are very volatile numbers. Gasoline can go up and down, and so can, you know, food prices depending on the weather or whatever. But the core inflation was a little more troubling because it went up 0.3% month over month. So November was 0.3 higher than October, but it's flat year over year at 4.0. So that was a suggestion that when you have headline and then you have core, and the core continues to push up, which means inflation has not been tamed by the circus master that, you know, runs around the rings and cracks the whip and the lions all jump around. The Fed hasn't been able to bring down inflation. If anything, it's zipping right along at 3-4%, which is well above the 2%, which is their benchmark under their dual mandate of full employment and low inflation. So it creates a real problem. But it gets worse. It gets worse. If you take the core minus shelter, which is rent or home ownership, then the core inflation actually went up 0.5% month over month, or month over month. And what that means is it's 0.5% up from October to November. And that is noticeable. I mean, if you take out food and energy and housing, which is what everybody's living on, everything else, which I'm not exactly sure what everything else is, other than it's a very large list, it's basically up 0.5%. So from the core minus shelter, we're seeing 4.8% year over year. That's a real problem, because at the end of the day, inflation is not going away. But then if you go to the report and the government's website, I mean, it's a whole bunch of data, but you can pick through the data. It's not that hard to read. And shelter inflation, if we took shelter out of the core, shelter inflation itself is up 6.8%, which means housing. And then rent inflation is 6.87%. So when you look at food and energy and, you know, effectively housing, you're still seeing 6.8% push in inflation on housing, which is a really high number. And that's why interest rates in the housing sector are 7 to 8%, because you have to be able to position yourself according to what's happening in an underlying inflationary economy. So I just want to go through a few more numbers, and then we'll think about what does this all mean, okay? One indicator that came out is, and this is somewhat troubling as we go into 2024, the election year. And of course, this is not a political show. This is an economic show and a finance show. And so, you know, it's time to point fingers. But the fingers were pointed by somebody else, and I'm just picking up on it, that over the course of the Biden administration, inflation is up 17.5%. Over the course of the Trump administration, well, prior 4 years, it was up only 8%. So now you can see all the political fingers pointing, you did it, your fault, that's what's going on. But the point is, over the last 3 years, 17.5% inflation overall within the system. And before that, 8%. So, you know, nobody escapes. But when you add that all up over the last 8 years, you're looking at 25%. Things have, you know, gone up a quarter in the last, you know, pick a number. The last, you know, basically last 8 years, the prices have gone up, you know, 25%. That's a lot of inflation in the system. So when you see those high inflations over two administrations, and of course we had COVID, there's always an excuse, there's always an event. But at the end of the day, when you're at the grocery store or you're at the gas station or you're buying a pair of shoes or you're trying to buy, you know, toys for the kids for Christmas, there's always events, but there's also, you know, 17.5% inflation and 8% inflation is 25%, more or less, 20 to 25% inflation. That becomes a real problem for the economy, no matter who's in power. So we really think about that from from the perspective of what is it going to do next year. And of course, the whole thing with this inflation report coming out yesterday is the prelude, kind of interesting. It all seems to happen the next day, which is today, Wednesday, December 13th, the Federal Open Market Committee, you know, I don't know if they ascend to Mount Etna or they descend from heaven to the top of, I don't know, they're heading into the conference room and they're going to consider whether or not to raise, lower, or keep interest rates flat. And then, you know, right about now, they're probably having lunch and then they'll vote on something. Okay. And maybe the news is broken. Here I am talking and the news could be breaking. So the question is, what will the Fed do? Will they increase interest rates? Will they keep interest rates flat? Or will they start to cut interest rates to stimulate the economy? Well, the consumer price index numbers that came out yesterday are somewhat troubling in that they don't show an explosion in inflation in the economy. We're not seeing prices going up 10% a day. This isn't, you know, the Germany of the 20s. But what we are seeing is this persistent push within the numbers that suggest that inflation is starting to burrow itself into the economy. And that becomes a very difficult thing to extract from the economy without taking some rather drastic steps, as we saw in the Reagan administration in the early 1980s, when President Reagan and Don Regan, the Treasury Secretary, the Janet Yellen of his day, basically had to make some tough decisions. And in order to stop inflation, they slammed the brakes on the economy and sent us back to the Stone Age for a few years until we could recover. And then, of course, they fixed it and it was wonderful right up until about 10 years ago. So the point is, the Fed is going to have to make some difficult decisions with respect to what to do. And if you read the inflation numbers, it suggests inflation is hot, so they ought to raise interest rates. The housing market, not only do we see higher prices in the housing sector, but we see a housing sector that's just basically dead because nobody is really interested in selling their home when they have a 2% mortgage to buy a new one with an 8% mortgage. And so when you look at the supply of housing and the demand for housing is way up high. Supply of housing is diminished. And of course, that leads to price pressures. That's why you see the 6.8% in shelter costs, because the market's out of whack. And the market's out of whack because for 20 years, we had low interest rates on homes. I mean, there were times when you could finance a home for, 1.5% mortgage. Those days are long gone. And so at the end of the day, you're seeing a real shock, a quick shock in the housing market, which is very destabilizing. So if the Fed comes along today and says, inflation's up 4%, we got to raise the rates. You are putting tremendous pressure on the largest sector of the American economy, which has always been the housing, whether it's apartments, building homes or subdivisions or commercial, whatever. This is not a good thing. So the Fed has a really difficult decision. You raise rates heading into an election year and you crater the economy. Car loan rates go up, credit card rates go up, mortgage rates go up, personal loan rates go up, commercial loan rates go up. If you can even find a commercial loan these days, that's not a good thing going into an election cycle. So we don't think that the Fed is going to raise rates. In the alternative, if the Fed cuts rates, because they take a look at, like we see that brick and mortar retail sales are down for the holidays and online sales are up for the holidays, but the economy is generally soft. If they lower the interest rates to push that punch bowl back to the edge of the table and stoke up the party, then you're going to be looking at inflation rates that are much higher than you see today. And when you look at, this core rate flat year over year, it's a 4% increase in prices year over year at the core. And that's double. That's double the dual mandate rate of 2%. You lower interest rates, and that number only gets worse. And politically, it's a very difficult thing because when rates are high, and that tends to push unemployment up, and the economy's slowing, and people aren't happy, and then you add inflation to that. That's what stagflation was all about in the 70s. And that was a political disaster. I mean, you ask poor President Jimmy Carter how that played out, and ask, poor President Reagan in spirit, what the drastic steps that he had to do to try and fix that. And let me tell you, when Reagan raised the interest rates to 18 to 20%, America squealed with pain, because that was really very, very difficult times to go through. And a lot of our industrial base at that point collapsed, and we ended up doing more and more manufacturing overseas. And the economy that emerged out of the 1980s, of course, 1984, and the Apple computer showed up, it effectively pretty much put asunder this idea that America was the manufacturing giant of the world and put us into a tech situation, the tech giant of the world, which we still are. But at the end of the day, it was a fundamental transformation in the lives of many, many people who were not necessarily prepared for the tech revolution and were very good at making things. That was the cost. So the Federal Reserve is cognizant of all of this. And of course, one of the intellectuals that I really enjoy following is David Stockman, who was President Ronald Reagan's budget director. And he was the first one to raise the red flag and say, hey, these federal budgets or deficits are becoming a thing. And to this day, I think he's still sending that message. From $1 billion deficit, now we're at $33 trillion. What is it, 33, 34, 35? I can't even keep track anymore. We're spending money like crazy. So at the end of the day, we have this very interesting conundrum, and we'll see what the Fed does. It's always fun to pull out the crystal ball and guess, and we won't have to. We'll know in an hour or two what they're going to do. But there are political ramifications for each choice. Raise the rates and slow the economy down even more going into an election. Lower the rates, blow inflation through the roof, or do nothing. And do nothing is sometimes the right thing to do. Maybe the best thing is to do nothing and just pray a lot over the holidays and see what happens in January. So we'll see what happens. I did want to move on to some other points of interest as well that There was an article that I read that was a little bit disturbing, and this sort of shows the problem the American consumer is having. And the article said that there are 28% of Americans are holding off on healthcare treatment because the cost of treatment is so high. And when you think about that, we talk about, student loans kicking in and, jobs are, payrolls aren't going up and you don't want to quit your job because there may not be another job somewhere else. And Americans, consumers are under pressure, food prices, gasoline prices. But when we think about it, the cost of healthcare in the United States is a very difficult number because the people, the insured, have really no bargaining power at all. And it's one of those interesting industries that's set up in a very peculiar way, where you as the consumer of healthcare, when you go into your clinic, you don't know what that's going to cost. You go into your favorite restaurant, they hand you a menu. Now, maybe if you're Bill Gates, you go to some fancy place in New York, they don't bother with menus. But for the vast majority of us, you go into your favorite restaurant, they hand you a menu. And on that menu is a list of stuff. And there's always a price on the other side, on the right side of the menu. There's always a price. So you think, well, I think I'd like to have chicken tonight, or maybe beef or lamb or something, or maybe pasta. And then you see what stimulates your appetite, but you also look at the price. You think, wow, that's a little bit pricey. I think I'll go back for the buttered noodles. That's what we'll do. But the point is there's a menu and you make a decision. And the same thing when you go to shop for a car. You go out and you buy a car and there's a window sticker. The federal government says if you're going to sell brand new cars, you have to put a window sticker on, and it's full disclosure of all material facts. There's the base price, and then there's the price of all the additions, and there's all these goofy fees, and then there's all this and that, and then there's the bottom line, the sticker price. And then so if you're on the dealer's lot, wandering around looking at the sticker, and you get sticker shock, you have the privilege of being sticker shocked because and can see the price of the car. But when you go into a clinic, oh, they call your name, you go in, a bunch of stuff happens, you come out, and a bill shows up, and it's like, wow, if I had known that this was $582 for an aspirin, I would have not gone to the clinic. Well, Americans have figured this out because Americans, they, like all people, are rational human beings. And in economics, we theoretically, Economics 101, the professor will dutifully teach you that people are economically rational, that if a price goes up, they'll buy less. If a price goes down, they'll buy more to some, elasticity of demand, depending on whether they want more or whatever. But people make rational choices. Like if the price of steak goes up, people tend to buy less steak. They don't buy more steak because the price is going up, okay? And sometimes you get into a sucker rally, like if a price of something is going up and you're the last guy in, you can get burned. So people know that. I say if something I like is going up in price, I'm not going to buy more. I'm going to buy less or shop for a substitute. That's what, demand substitution and elasticity. I mean, how much elasticity do you have? Well, in two sectors, you don't have much elasticity. Number one, electricity and your utilities. Unless you like living in the dark, you're pretty much captive. And the government recognized this back in the early 1900s and said, boy, those electric companies are monopolies, and they're the only one in town that provides electricity. So they could really put everybody on the elevator and charge, a lot of money for electricity. So let's regulate them. And that's what they did. They have the regulations, the regulatory agencies, the Public Service Commission, Public Utilities Commission. And what they do is they set the electric rate based upon a return on the invested capital of the utility. So if the utility invests $100 in a machine and the government says, well, you can get a 10% return on that. So that they get, $10 return. But in order to get this monopoly with a guaranteed return on capital, which means there's basically no risk, the industry, no risk, you have to agree to provide electricity to everybody. Anybody who wants to buy it, anybody who wants to sign up, you've got to sell it. And you're going to sell it exactly at this price because, we do all the math and we all agree that you're going to make a 10% return on your invested capital. And that's the whole model of regulatory, how do you regulate an industry? And utilities are somewhat unique in America, that they're really the only utility that is regulated at that level. And it comes out of the thought process of the 1930s of central planning in the Soviet Union, that there'd be a bunch of bureaucrats, they'd figure out, instead of allowing the free market to operate in a utility situation, there is no free market. There's one electric company, and the government's going to approve the rate, and you're going to pay it. You use electricity, you pay the rate, and the electric company gets a return on its equity. And this is all published, and that's why a lot of people like electric company stocks, because they tend to do well unless they invest in nuclear energy. But at the end of the day, that's a regulated industry. In the healthcare sector, not so much. Nobody regulates that. And it's the same model. And that's why you see so many clinics in any metropolitan area. They got clinic after clinic after clinic after clinic after clinic. If you were in business, and say you were selling cars or something, you would not build an outlet on every single street corner because you wouldn't have enough sales volume to support that capital expenditure. So you're very careful. You know, if you're in a sub sandwich shop or any pick any franchise, they think of a McDonald's or something. They think, okay, we're gonna put one here. What's the local demand? And they do a lot of math and try to figure it out because the risk's on them. You put a location in the wrong spot, nobody comes, you know, you lose money. It's not so with healthcare. Because what happens is you've taken the ability of the healthcare customer out of the equation, and the suppliers negotiate with the insurance companies, and the insurance companies have the people captive. They negotiate the rates with the supplier. So you get, $6,000 deductible, and you get, all these healthcare plans. And these are all approved by the states, by the way. Healthcare insurance is always approved by your state. This doesn't happen in a vacuum. But what the states approve is these very, very punitive costs for healthcare. And that's why when you got a $6,000 deductible and you have to go in, you're foregoing medical care because you have nothing to say about it. You have nothing to say about the price. All you know is something's going to happen to you. They may fix you, they may not. But you're going to get a bill, and that bill's going to be very large, and that's coming out of the same money that you buy groceries and gasoline and all this other stuff. So at the end of the day, it's a real problem. And I think healthcare costs need to be analyzed in this equation of what's happening to the American consumer. I'll talk more about it. I'm out of time for today. Thank you so much. Wait with me with bated breath to see what the Federal Open Market Committee is doing, if they haven't announced already. And we'll talk to you tomorrow. Have a great afternoon. Bye.